And we are told the Buddha delivers a great discourse. He delivers a discourse on infinity, a very popular Buddhist topic. He speaks on infinity, and he speaks for a very long time, very eloquently, and everybody is deeply moved, deeply affected, deeply impressed, so much so that we are told flowers start falling from the sky. Beautiful flowers of many colors start raining down from the heavens, and the whole universe shakes and trembles in six different ways. And then, having delivered that discourse on infinity, the Buddha enters into deep meditation. His eyes are closed and his whole body is perfectly still, perfectly rigid. And while he is meditating, as he is meditating, there comes forth from a spot between his eyebrows a brilliant ray of pure white light. And the brilliance of this ray of light is so intense, the ray of light is so powerful, that it illumines in all the directions of space innumerable world systems. It's as though a great searchlight had been turned on and swept all around the universe so that one could see millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of miles into the depth of space. And then what does one see there? One sees in the depth of space world systems innumerable, universes innumerable. And in each and every one of them one sees much the same sort of thing that one sees in this universe, on this earth, or at least that one saw then, in those days. One sees in each universe, in each world system, a Buddha preaching, surrounded by disciples. One sees bodhisattvas practicing the six great disciplines. So this is the spectacle revealed by this ray of pure white light which issues from that spot between the Buddha's eyebrows as he sits there meditating. So naturally the great assembly is really astonished. They wonder what it means, what it signifies, what's going to happen. And nobody knows. So Maitreya, one of the bodhisattvas, the future Buddha, as he's sometimes called, asks the meaning of this phenomenon, and he asks Manjushri, the wisest of the bodhisattvas, traditionally regarded as the incarnation of wisdom. Manjushri is the bodhisattva who is represented with a flaming sword, the sword of knowledge, which cuts asunder the bonds of karma or conditionality. So Maitreya asks, what does it all mean? What is the significance of this great occurrence? So Manjushri says, I believe, I'm not sure, but I believe it means that the Buddha is about to proclaim the White Lotus Sutra. So after he has said this, the Buddha very slowly emerges from his meditation and he opens his eyes. And what does he say? He's as though speaking to himself, and he says, the truth in its fullness is very difficult to understand. This is what he says, as it were spontaneously, as he comes out of his meditation. The truth in its fullness is very difficult to understand. So difficult, he says, that only the Buddhas, only the fully enlightened ones, the perfectly enlightened ones, are able to understand it. Only they see, know, realize the truth in its fullness, not others. This is perhaps a very salutary sort of recollection for us. That is only the Buddhas, only the fully enlightened ones who know the truth in its fullness. Everybody else, the Buddha tells the assembly, has to approach the truth gradually, step by step, working their way into it, as it were, little by little. And he goes on to explain that this is why he preaches the Arahant ideal, the ideal of gaining nirvana in the sense of extinction of passions only, first. He doesn't preach all at once the higher, more Mahayanistic ideal of perfect Buddhahood or realization of perfect Buddhahood by following the career of a Bodhisattva. This he preaches only afterwards, when the lower truth, the lower ideal has been achieved, has been assimilated, has been understood. So he preaches step by step. He takes people, as it were, by the hand, he says, and he leads them one step, one stage at a time. If he revealed the highest truth all at once, people would be shocked, would be terrified, would be unable to receive, unable to assimilate it. We find something like this in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where it is said that on death, what happens first is that just in one blinding flash, as it were, reality in its fullness dawns on the mind. But the mind is unable to receive it. It shrinks back terrified, and it falls to lower and ever lower levels of reality, and until it finds a level on which it is at home. So the Buddha is in possession, as it were, of the full truth, the highest truth, but he doesn't dare, as it were, to reveal it all at once to his disciples. He takes them step by step, stage by stage, takes them so far first, then he shows them the next stage, and so on, until they get to the ultimate goal. So he says on this occasion that he's not sure, looking around the assembly, he's not sure whether even now everybody is ready, everybody is prepared to receive the highest truth. He says, I've not yet given the highest truth. I've taken you all so far, but there's still a bit farther to go. There's still a bit more to learn. You don't know it all yet. There are many things that you don't know, which the Buddhas know, which I know, but which you do not yet know. You haven't really yet come to the ultimate goal. So this is what the disciples hear. And what happens? The sutra says that at that point, 5,000 disciples walked out. A very dramatic little incident. They staged a walkout, and they murmured among themselves, and they said, something more to learn? Good heavens, no. We know it all already. What is the Buddha talking about? We're enlightened. We've got nirvana. Something more to learn? That's impossible. Maybe the Buddha's getting a bit senile. Something more to learn? Not for us. And out they go. And they give, as they go up, the Buddha a very perfunctory bow, just for old time's sake, as it were, and out they go, and they shake the dust of the assembly from their, well, sandals or bare feet, as the case might have been. So here also is a lesson for us. It's only too easy to think that we know it all already, and sometimes we do intellectually, but that isn't really knowing it at all. If we're not very careful, sometimes we think, well, there's no further to go. I've got it. I've understood it. I'm there. But this is the biggest danger of all. So they succumbed, those 500 disciples, they succumbed to that danger because they thought that they had nothing more to learn from the Buddha, that there was no truth higher than that which they already had learned. So the Buddha let them go. He didn't say anything. And when they had gone, he simply said, now the assembly is quite pure. In other words, now the assembly consists of people who are receptive, who are prepared to consider that there may be something more for them to learn. This rather reminds me of a little episode from English religious history, an occasion when a number of religious sectaries met with Oliver Cromwell. And they had a very terrific argument over some knotty points of scripture. And there was no moving them. They were really obstinate. And Cromwell, at the end, in desperation, said to them, he said, "Reverend sirs, I beg of you to consider the possibility that you may be mistaken." So this is sometimes the point that is reached.